Until recently, students of Bible prophecy were in agreement regarding the interpretation of most of the prophetic passages dealing with an end-time scenario. Debates on the matter of Bible prophecy mostly had to do with the timing of the rapture. Would that happen in the beginning, middle, or end of the tribulation period? That's no longer the case, as recent events have served to shift perspective and encourage a fresh look at what prophecy experts thought was settled agreement. Stay tuned for my conversation with author, researcher, and prophecy expert Douglas Woodward next on this episode on Soaring Eagle Radio.
Remember that your failure to be informed does not make me a wacko.
The time has come, Dolores said. You talk of other things, of shoes and ships and sealing wax and cabbages and kings.
My mind doesn't work that way. I got this real moron thing I do. It's called thinking. And I'm not a very good American because I like to form my own opinions. I have certain rules I live by. My first rule, I don't believe anything the government tells me. And I don't take very seriously the media or the press in this country.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Nine most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Hello, and welcome to Soaring Eagle Radio. Your host is Mike Spaulding. Get ready to be challenged and encouraged as you consider today's news and Mike's commentary from a biblical perspective. Now, let's join Mike.
Welcome, friends. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Soaring Eagle Radio. You can subscribe to the show on the normal places, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and of course, listen to every episode on our website, www.soaringeagleradio.com. My guest today is Douglas Woodward, and I've been waiting for this conversation for a long time. Appreciate Doug's work. He's an author, speaker, researcher on the topics of alternate history, the apocalypse and culture, biblical eschatology, with an emphasis upon America's place in Bible prophecy. He's written 12 books, including co-authoring the bestseller The Final Babylon in 2013. He authored Lying Wonders of the Red Planet, 2014, and Uncommon Sense in 2014. His latest book is entitled The Next Great War in the Middle East, and that was just released recently. That's the subject of my conversation with Doug tonight. Welcome to Soaring Eagle Radio Show, Doug.
Hey, Mike. Thank you for having me. It's we've been talking about this for a while, so it's finally great for us to get together.
Absolutely. I've had this day circled on my calendar for a long time. That I could sit down and have a chat with you. I really appreciate your work. And we don't want to just focus on the next great war, although that is in the news today, so we'll probably start there. But we want to save some time and get to your latest work, a collaboration with three other authors. And I think folks are going to be absolutely amazed at what you've put together in that book. But to get us started tonight, in the news now is the latest push by the Iraqi forces trying to recapture Mosul. And I know that you've been tracking that, Doug. Would you get our listeners up to date on that?
Right. Well, it's been just in the last day or so, as we're recording this this program, that the Iraqis, really led by the Peshmerga, the Kurdish fighters, have been successfully going through and kind of cleaning up a number of villages surrounding Mosul. And Mosul was the ancient city of Nineveh. So it's where Jonah, his tomb was until ISIS destroyed it some time ago when they took over Mosul. So most of the attention has been lately on Aleppo, mm-hmm. where there's been a lot of conflict between really the troops of Bashar al-Assad, supported by the Russians, against the coalition forces, supporting various Syrian rebel groups, probably including al-Qaeda, mm-hmm. and possibly including ISIS,
yeah.
Supported by the United States. And, of course, that's part of the controversy that's been ongoing recently in the presidential debates and so forth.
Yes.
So these two cities, Aleppo and Mosul, really are the focal points for the combat that is underway, and really is at the focal point of what could be, unfortunately, the first steps in World War III, and it's intended to be because we are potentially at the cusp of that kind of event, unless somebody is overstating their intent, whether on the Russian side or on the United States side, because it's a very tense time that we live in at this very moment.
Yes, there's a lot of saber rattling going on for sure, and I've heard that from a number of different sources that we're kind of in a stare down with each other, and it's amazing to me, Doug, that the average American citizen does not have a grasp of the truth of what's going on in the Middle East, in these cities, especially Aleppo that you've talked about, and really Syria, generally speaking. We're facing off against the Russians and some others, and this could very easily escalate into World War III.
Well, it could, and it kind of was really brought into focus just in the last debate, the second of the three debates between Clinton and Trump. Hillary was particularly used some very strong words talking about Russia. She's been conveying that she believes that the Russians have been involved directly in attempting to hack into the DNC computer systems, and she claims that they were responsible, the Russians were responsible for breaking the information about Debbie Wasserman Schultz,
yes.
Schultz and the manipulation of in the campaign against Bernie Sanders. And so so she's being very spiteful towards the Russians. She's been indicating that perhaps there should be a no-fly zone set up over Syria, and only also the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Dunford, I believe, of the Marine Corps, he's the head of the Joint Chiefs. He was asked by Congress what would be the meaning of establishing a no-fly zone in Syria, and he essentially said, well, it would be a declaration of war against Bashar al-Assad and against the Russians. So to attempt to do a no-fly zone would be to say we are ready to go directly to war with the Russians. And so we've been sort of living under really for the last couple of weeks, and Hillary has been, as I said, kind of particularly spiteful and saber-rattling, perhaps is the right term. So, we're living under, it's a very tenuous time, and it's not quite clear. There have been lots of rumors circulating that both sides are getting ready for war. The Russians did a massive civil defense exercise this past week, supposedly involving 40 million Russian citizens.
Yes.
Taking to underground bunkers that the Russians have prepared for their citizenry. And as I jokingly said on another radio program the other night, the only thing that the U.S. government has really been supportive of is allowing large corporations to build big stadiums for us to watch football games.
Isn't that the truth?
No underground bunkers to protect the citizens of a nuclear war. And so, the issue really is most American media moguls are so... the pundits, in fact, are saying, "Oh, it's not conceivable that the Russians really could go to the DEFCON 1 to, in effect, go to nuclear war. They would never do that." Now, the reality is that, from my point of view, and this is the way I've coined the phrase, is that for Americans, we think it's unthinkable. For the Russians, they believe it's inevitable.
Yes.
And so, we really are, in my opinion, at a very risky, pivotal point in world history, and it is not overstating the case to say that humanity is at a crisis point that it has not been at since 1962.
Yes.
The Cuban Missile Crisis. And so, and to your point, the U.S. population is so busy worrying about the NFL, you know, games on Sundays and the Major League Baseball playoffs, and the breakup of Brad and Angelina, that it doesn't really have time to focus on world events that are going on right now. You know, it's helped along. It elects not that it chooses really to get very much information about what's going on in the world, and so it does not wish to point out that the rancor between the Russians and the United States is as serious as it is.
Yes.
So it's important for programs like yours, Mike, and others on sort of alternative media to try to get through to an American population.
And that's, Doug, that is a great way to frame what's going on there now and our lack of perception. Of course, that's all media-driven. They're our media, and listeners have heard me say this a multitude of times, but our media is carrying water for the globalists and those that have really they really don't care whether America succeeds or not. Their eyes are someplace else. But be that as it may, that's a great segue into your book, The Next Great War in the Middle East, Russia Prepares to Fulfill the Prophecy of Gog and Magog. All of this that's going on today, and I say this from the pulpit often, Doug, you can take today's headlines and you could put them on your pulpit and you could preach a sermon right out of the scripture that talks specifically about the things that we're seeing unfold today. And your book, in my view, it answers some very, very important questions. For example, who is Gog? Who is the Antichrist? Will the Antichrist be Muslim, or will he be a Jew, or of another ethnicity, nationality, or religion?
Or a European.
That's exactly right. Until recently, Christians who paid attention to prophecy pretty much agreed on all the major details of the end time scenario. And I, you know, growing up, I remember how Lindsay and Chuck Missler and folks such as those, Rome was going to be the seat of the Antichrist, and the Antichrist was going to be a Jew, and the United States was not going to be a player then, and the rapture of the church was pre-tribulational. Nobody really argued much about that. Mystery Babylon was Roman Catholicism, and the return of Israel to their brand new homeland in 1948. Well, that was a key indicator that we were in the last times, but things have changed a little bit, haven't they, Doug?
Well, they have. Sounds like you read the introduction of my book.
I think I did.
Yeah, I spent 10 or 15 pages just sort of saying, you know, here's the way the prophecy was about 40 years ago, and now let's look at all of the changes.
That's right.
And you did a good job of touching on those. And yes, it's, we really have had some major changes in Bible prophecy. Now, for all of that, for the most part, I'm still pretty much a conventional, believer in Bible prophecy. And so, while I got my sort of first lessons from Hal Lindsey, and then later from, probably Grant Jeffrey, and more recently Chuck Missler.
Yeah.
For the most part, I'm still pretty conventional. There are several things that I do differ on that. Myself and some colleagues that we've emphasized. We'll talk about some of those, but yeah, the single biggest factor that has been very influential in the last, I'd say, 10 years has been whether the Antichrist would in fact be a European, a Muslim,
yes,
or perhaps even an American. And so I've had the occasion, really the two individuals that have been, well, it's really three. I'd say Perry Stone probably was kind of the first to begin to talk about the possibility of the Muslim Antichrist. Waleed Shubat and then Joel Richardson, they've talked about it extensively. I've had a chance to actually talk with Joel and have a very friendly debate with Joel on the subject of the Islamic Antichrist. And I actually wrote, this last year, I've really written four books. So I've actually...
Wow.
war in the Middle East. One is on the subject of the possibility of the Muslim Antichrist. The name of the book is Mistaken Identity, The Case Against the Islamic Antichrist. And in that book, I talk about 10 specific reasons why I believe that Joel is wrong, and that the Antichrist will not be a Muslim. And it's because the argument really, and this is kind of at the core also of the next great war in the Middle East, is that it's not just the issue of whether the Antichrist would be Islamic. The Antichrist could be Islamic. The issue is that the Islamic Antichrist position paints a picture very different than the conventional view of Bible prophecy. Mm. It's different in several ways, and let me kind of enumerate what those are.
Yes.
That the Islamic Antichrist just really collapses all these different personages into one person. So the Islamic Antichrist argues that the Mahdi, Gog from Gog and Magog, or Gog from the land of Magog, and the Antichrist are all the same personage. So there's not a distinction between Gog, who conventional theory looks at as a Russian, or the Islamic Antichrist emphasizes that person is probably a Turk. Mm-hmm. Walid Shubat's been very outspoken that he believes that it is the current president of Turkey, Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Joel is less dogmatic about identifying, sort of as we used to say, pin the tail on the Antichrist.
Yeah.
He doesn't necessarily pin the tail on Erdogan, but he does believe Turkey is the essential region from which the Antichrist would come.
Mm-hmm.
And as a quick sidebar, I go into extensive analysis of why I don't believe Turkey is in fact the nation from which the Antichrist will come. But nevertheless, going back to sort of the reasons why the Islamic Antichrist is not, in my view, the case, is that it's unlikely that that a nation like Turkey, or even a combination of Turkey and Iran, Iraq, we'll call it the Shia Crescent, combining then also a Sunni nation, Turkey, that those groups of nations by themselves could attack Israel, and that the world would essentially sit it out, that Russia would not be involved, the United States would not be involved, Europe would not be involved. It seems impossible to me, given the history of geopolitics over the last 100 and really 300 years almost, that Turkey, even teaming together, which is kind of illogical because one's Shia and one's Sunni,
yes,
but assuming for a second that they overcome that, it seems impossible states would absolutely do nothing.
Right.
There's an interpretation of Ezekiel 38, verses 10 through 13, that talks about the merchants of Tarshish, the young lions, Sheba and Dedan, and then the conventional view is that, well, they are sort of sitting out, they do nothing. That, I think, is an incorrect view, which we may not have time to elaborate on that. But nevertheless, it seems very unlikely that these major world powers would not be involved. And the part of the reason is that Joel argues that is that he believes that the Bible is a Middle Eastern book. It is a book that focuses on Israel at the center of the world from a biblical worldview, and that all of the other nations that are involved are simply those regional nations. So it's kind of like you could draw about a 1,000-mile radius from Jerusalem outward, and the Bible doesn't really speak to any nation outside of that sort of 1,000-mile radius.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I believe that might have been true up until Jesus died, but once the Messiah for the whole world, all of a sudden, I don't believe the Bible is purely a regional book anymore.
Yeah.
And jumping then to a specific issue, where I differ is that I believe that the United States is in Bible prophecy, and it's specifically in it's in fairly considerable detail laid out in Jeremiah 50 and 51, and talking specifically about the United States in Bible prophecy, and I even believe, and this is what I argue in the next great war in the Middle East, that if one does examine Ezekiel 38:13 as well as the context of the whole chapter 38 and 39 of Ezekiel, that it's very clear that the United States is in Bible prophecy, even in Ezekiel 38. And so that's what Joel and I have been debating. And, of course, Bill Salas doesn't agree with me about the United States being in Bible prophecy. And I claim the United States is the land of unwalled villages talked about in Ezekiel 38, 10 through 13. Bill would argue, no, it's Israel. The context purely, you know, completely says that it's Israel. And I'd say, yeah, that would be true unless you actually examine a series of other verses, and which I do in the next great war in the Middle East. So anyway, the whole scenario, the Islamic Antichrist says there's only one major battle. It's the same battle, God's name battle. And so it basically what it does is it conflates a whole series of the conventional views of Bible prophecy into sort of a simplified, regionalized, one battle, one bad guy kind of point of view, and it kind of cuts out so much else that's talked about in eschatology. And so consequently, although many, many, many evangelicals have come to believe in the Islamic Antichrist as the, you know, as sort of the prevailing view, maybe even the majority view today, I believe that it actually breaks down when one really studies the scriptures.
Yes, and I know that Psalm 83 is also a point
of dispute. I just talked to Bill, interviewed him maybe 10 days ago, and we chatted about this, and that view is that Psalm 83 is the next war, but I don't think that's your take on it, is it, Doug?
He thinks you asked the question in a very understated way. Well, it's not. Now, I love Bill, Bill's a
oh, yes.
brother, and
yes.
we owe him a lot. He's done a lot of it. I apologize. My dog may be barking in the background.
That's okay.
If I have to shut him out, I will.
Yeah.
But Bill and I do disagree on the issue of American Bible prophecy. And admittedly, you know, his kind of like the Islamic Antichrist, which, by the way, Bill and I agree, and we disagree with Joe Richardson on that. But you know, Bill does believe that the Psalm 83 war is a future war.
Mm-hmm.
He believes that it is a necessary precondition before Gog and Magog can occur, and he has very good arguments. The kind of the concept of the sort of inner ring of nations that immediately surround Israel, the fact that those inner ring of nations, such as a Jordan or a Lebanon, are not mentioned in the Ezekiel 38 chapter, you know, it is a strong argument for the Psalm 83 war being the next war. However, the problem with the Psalm 83 war is, in my view, you know, one is that historically it was likely already fulfilled in the time of King David. Asaph, who wrote the psalm, was sort of the choir director for King
yes.
David.
Yes.
And part of the issue is that I believe that the Psalm 83 was fulfilled in the time of David, the king. Asaph, his choir director, more or less, who wrote the psalm. I believe that history shows that it was fulfilled at that time. There's several other issues, but one of them is that Bill gets into a view, and he's not alone. I mean, he holds probably what I would say is the majority view, and other, you know, well-known and well-thought-of folks like David Reagan would agree with Bill in this respect, that Psalm 83 is the next war. Bill argues that the tents of Eden reflect the Palestinians. That's one of the kind of the key arguments. And historically, that's a real problematic argument.
Yeah.
The Palestinians are not Edomites. The Edomites were the lineage of Esau, essentially. They became the Idumeans. King Herod.
Yes.
Is the Herodians were Idumeans. And the general view is that the Idumeans were dispersed as part of the diaspora along with the Jews at 70 AD and then after 135 AD and the Bar Kokhba rebellion. that, you know, Idumean sort of went away. But there's another argument that suggests that the Edomites actually, many Edomites lived in the Turkey area, in the area of Turkey, and it's possible that the Edomites mentioned in Psalm 83, if Psalm 83 in fact is a future war, reflects not the Palestinians but the Turks, So it's one possibility. So one of the things I find interesting, and again this gets into more of a scholarly study, but what's curious is that both Bill and Joel Richardson, what they share is a hermeneutic that I think was probably one of the biggest mistakes being made in today's Bible prophecy, which is a belief. It's what's called the geographical correlation theory. And it was put forth, it's either Norman Geisler or one of the other sort of well-known theologians of our time. I think it's Gleason Archer is what I think it was. Put together the concept that it does not matter the peoples that lived in the lands mentioned by the Bible. For instance, if we're talking about, for instance, Edom or the Amorites or Ammon, it doesn't matter that the people that lived in the time of the Bible no longer live there. It only matters that those nations or those locations are identified in the end times. And whoever happens to be living there will in fact be the fulfillment of that prophecy. That's actually a view that is shared by Joel Richardson and Bill. It's interesting because they do disagree with each other on many points, but they actually use the same hermeneutic. And in the research I've done more recently, even since the next Great War in the Middle East, my research suggests that, no, you actually do need to follow the peoples of the times of the Bible, and you need to find out where they migrated to rightly understand who these nations refer to in Ezekiel 38, Psalm 83, or other passages in Jeremiah. But we really need to understand where these people that were listed in these prophecies, where they were at the time of the prophecies, and where they might be today.
Yeah.
And that actually provides fascinating insights, I believe, into how Bible prophecies will be fulfilled in our day. And so that's something that I do in at my website. There are a number of, I have like all of my PowerPoints from my various presentations listed there. And there are a couple of PowerPoints that your listeners could now that get into this. And my website is ironically, the name I came up with, is doomsdaydoug.com. It was my Twitter handle, and a marketing consultant basically said, that's what you need to have your website, because be named that because people can remember it. And I go, well, that's a good point.
That's for sure. Yes, it certainly is. I'm surprised it was available.
But anyway, if you go to my website and you look under PowerPoints, you'll find two PowerPoints, one called The Next Great War, the Middle East, go figure, and the other one is T-minus 10 years and counting. And in those two PowerPoints, they're lengthy, but I go into considerable detail laying these things out. So for those students that really want to understand why it is that the Islamic Antichrist and Psalm 83, that neither of those really tell you, in my view, what is the next great war in the Middle East, those would be very, very helpful.
Yeah. And I think, Doug, isn't this geographic correlation hermeneutic, what you use to argue for the Turkish people as being the new candidate for Gog and Magog?
It's what Joel uses.
Okay,
It's what Joel would use that. No, I would, in fact, because I look at the Russians believing that the Rus or the Meshek and Tubal, the geographic correlation theory basically puts a breaks between the people and the location. Whereas I'd say no, the location in the Bible of the prophecy of Ezekiel was north of north of the Caspian Sea. It was current-day Russia, and it is the Russian people. There's a sort of lack of correlation in the correlation theory,
as it's called,
between the people and the nation state or the location. I actually say, for instance, that the merchants of Tarshish, this would be another example, the merchants of Tarshish really references England. And it did at the time when Ezekiel wrote the prophecy. It referenced Spain and England, the islands of tin that had lots of deposits of tin. And it may have even, and this is going out on a limb more, referenced copper. And copper may have come from, believe it or not, the United States. Mm-hmm. That the Bronze Age was, bronze is a combination of tin and copper. And it may well have been copper from the United States and tin from England and Spain that were the kind of the key components in the bronze of the Bronze Age. Mm-hmm. And so all this requires, this is not something that you study for 15 minutes. This all requires a considerable amount of research. But in the book, The Final Babylon, we talk about this considerably, and we look at the Phoenicians that were originally the Zidonians, Tyre and Sidon, their migration to Carthage, the Carthaginians, founded by Pygmalion, basically, mm-hmm. and then the famous warrior Hannibal that gave Rome fits and almost undid the Roman Empire were Carthaginians. And, and so as one studies it, one soon realizes and one soon learns that Hannibal, for instance, was a worshiper of Nimrod, mm-hmm. and known by different names, but he actually sacrificed to the god of Nimrod in Tartessus, which is probably where Tarshish comes from in Spain, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. So I go into this in the books, and can't really go into much more detail in a radio program like
right,
this, but
right.
just to say that that when one digs into these things, you find out that there's a lot more to it, and that a cursory review, which I think you know is kind of what most people are satisfied with, really doesn't tell you the gravity of the situation, who these players really are. And so anyway, it's my view that, and you know, there's other folks like John Price, who wrote the foreword to my book, The Next Great War in the Middle East. John Price wrote a book called The End of America. And John agrees with me that the suggestions that I've had related to Ezekiel 38, 10 through 13, the possibility that it's the United States that is referenced as the land of unwalled villages in that specific sort of parenthetical comment in Ezekiel, that it may well be the United States. And Bill doesn't really... the Psalm 83 point of view doesn't really have a good answer for who is being referenced in Jeremiah 50 and 51. And so, anyway, there's many other scholars, certainly Noah Hutchings, Tom Horn, Frank Logsdon back from the 1960s, the mm-hmm. Moody Church pastor.
Yes.
Many others that have agreed that America is in Bible prophecy. And so we talk about those, and I've got a presentation, again, in the PowerPoint section on my website that talks about, specifically, it's entitled America is in Bible Prophecy, and it goes into the history of all of that, which I think, of course, would. I think it's pretty fascinating.
It absolutely is, and I wonder, and I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole because I want to get back to your latest book that you've just released with three other co-authors. But I've read your work and studied it myself related to America as Babylon, and I have to say, Doug, that was like a lightning bolt. For me, that's a good way to describe it, because I'm an old school guy, and so prophetically I followed the path that had been taught and that I had come to believe, and I'd studied on my own. I just didn't accept it blindly, but your research and work it really gave me pause. And I've taken to discussing that with a number of people now. So I wonder if you would just fill in our listeners on that whole subject, America is Babylon.
Sure. Well, the issue, most prophecy teachers historically have said America is absent from Bible prophecy. And they, whether it was Grant Jeffrey or Hal Lindsey or Tim LaHaye, you know, they have all said, well, you won't find America listed in Bible prophecy. Well, obviously you wouldn't. But there are definitely references and symbols and so forth. But it gets more into the issue of attributes. And if one gets into looking at all of the attributes laid out for the daughter of Babylon, which is the phrase that's used in it's used in Jeremiah 50 and 51, in Isaiah 13, Isaiah 47, Zechariah. It's referenced, I think it's, John Bryce says, it's like 223 verses or 221 verses that are in context, the daughter. It opens the door to a pretty remarkable assembly of verses that do specify, I believe, the United States of America. Now, what's another nuance, though, is that there is really a difference, in my view, between the daughter of Babylon and Mystery Babylon. I see Mystery Babylon as a symbol of the rebellion and opposition to the kingdom of God. I see sort of the kingdom of Babylon, Mystery Babylon, as a religious, an economic, a political system, and that it has always stood in opposition to the holy city of Jerusalem, to the city that Abraham sought, as Paul talks about in the book of Hebrews. And so you sort of have, in the book of Revelation, to some extent the entire Bible, the tale of two cities. You have the tale of the city of Jerusalem and the tale of the city of Babylon. And so it really begins, the Bible Code, excuse me, is it called the Bible? The Babylon Code, written by Paul McGuire and Troy Anderson. Read that carefully. I've interviewed Paul McGuire. I'm quoted frequently in that book. You may or may not have noticed if you've read the book. Troy and I have talked extensively about it, and so it is a best-selling book right now, but it really begins, the story begins with the Tower of Babel, what was going on at the Tower of Babel, and extends all the way to the present day. Now, the change, and I do reserve the right to change my point of view, the change that I've made since The Final Babylon, which I wrote along with Doug Krieger and Dean McGriff in 2013, is I have decided, based upon discussions with a variety of people, that the daughter of Babylon refers to the United States. I believe the United States will be attacked and decimated before the Great Tribulation or the final 7 years begins, and that's kind of this T-minus 10 years and counting. And I talk about this specifically in Chapter 10 of The Next Great War in the Middle East, is that I believe the United States will be attacked, and I believe that we could be right at the cusp of that even as we speak, that the United States could be attacked, a nuclear first strike, that it will cause the world to more or less faint. Within a few months of the United States being attacked by Rosh, the prince of Meshach and Tubal, that God himself, as Rosh is preparing to come against Israel, that God will bring judgment against Rosh and all of the armies that have assembled together, as described in Ezekiel 38, and that those armies will be destroyed. So I believe the world could see the United States and Russia both taken out of the world is point, and within 3 years, this strong man emerges, either an English king or perhaps a German leader, and I think there's some pretty good arguments that it could be a German, will become the Antichrist and will create the sort of 7-year treaty with Israel, and will, in effect, bring the world together and finally, sort of instantiate, is the word we use, the New World Order in its final form. And so I believe the daughter of Babylon is sort of the second to the last incarnation of Babylon. The final incarnation of Babylon will be, I think, in Europe, and it will be a European Confederacy, and the only other real power structure will be the kings of the East. And so it kind of brings me back closer to the conventional view. But the big difference is that the daughter of Babylon has not been dealt with in the conventional view, and that's really what we're doing in the final Babylon and in the next great war of the Middle East. So, and unfortunately, a lot of the articles we've written lately and things I've talked about suggest that we could be right at that moment in time right now. So folks should really be spiritually, and depending upon your view of the rapture, perhaps physically too.
That's a very good point, Doug, because I happen to agree with you on that. I think we're on the precipice. And I don't think that it matters. I see a lot of talk about, well, will it be a hard target strike, a hard target nuclear strike? Will it be an EMP? At this point, I don't think it really matters because we're going to be incapacitated regardless.
It could be either one. The verses in Jeremiah, if you read it carefully, it's, you know, there's also in Isaiah, it talks about the daughter of Babylon being as of being like Sodom and Gomorrah in terms of its destruction. So, and it says that it will not be inhabitable afterwards. And so, you know, I would say to folks, if you're interested in this, there's a 30-minute interview that you can find on my website or on YouTube that I did with Ben Baruch and with Jeff Nyquist. Jeff is really an expert on this whole issue of Russian military and political strategy, and we talk about this in great detail, looking at it really from a geopolitical standpoint, and why this is potentially so imminent that it's very frightening right now.
So I would I would encourage listeners to go find that on YouTube, Jeff Nyquist and Benjamin Baruch, and those two wrote a very interesting book, The New Tactics of Global Warfare, I believe was the name.
Yes, I wrote the foreword to that book, and so we have talked and continue to talk pretty frequently about things that are as they're progressing. So
we
have a few minutes left. We need to talk about the brand new book.
Well, yes, that was going to be my next question. I wanted to hear a little bit about Revising Reality, a biblical look into the cosmos. And I'm looking at it on Amazon, Doug, and it says Volume One. So
that's true.
that
we have a plan.
Okay.
If the Lord doesn't come, there will be a Volume Two. Let me give listeners just a kind of a description of what we're trying to do in this book. The name has multiple meanings. You know, that we really believe that science has misled most of us in the teaching that we've had in our public school system and so forth, and on television, and in movies, that we've been led to believe in the Big Bang Theory and dark matter and dark energy, and we've been led to believe that the universe will eventually die a death of entropy and so forth, and we've been led to believe that it's strings vibrating and all that, that there's 10 dimensions. And it turns out that almost all of these things are theories that are not proven. And in some cases, for instance, even string theory, there's now quite a few scientists that don't believe that string theory is, in fact, accurate. And yet we persist in talking about 10 dimensions and all that. And so we, you know, part of Revising Reality is to say, well, as Christians, we need to recognize that there is inconsistency between the cosmology of the Bible, the worldview of the Bible, and it ends with God creating a new heavens and a new earth. And so it is about the cosmos, reshaping, reforming, and kind of unbrainwashing us on the things that the science has talked about that prove that have even been proven by science not necessarily to be true. And so there's a need for us as Paul talks about in Romans 12, to not allow our minds to be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of our minds,
amen.
And may prove that which is good and acceptable and perfect. And so there is a need for us to have our minds sort of refreshed and re-cleansed, and our reality needs to be revised. And to some extent, it needs to be revised, you know, sort of like back to the future, back to the Bible. We need to go back to understand what it is the Bible teaches about cosmology, and it's really different than what, you know, people think. And as soon as we move out of Genesis 6 and we start learning about these fallen angels and the Nephilim and so forth, and it gives us a very different understanding of evil. You know, in seminary, you probably had courses in theodicy and,
yep.
you know, the origin of evil and,
yep.
and so forth. And the Bible is very clear that evil is not a force. It is not like there is a good force and a bad force.
Right.
The Bible is very clear that evil is incarnated in persons.
Yes.
And in Lucifer or in Satan, the adversary,
yes.
in the fallen angels, the hybrid children that they give birth to, and then Michael Heiser, who's done just a brilliant work in The Unseen Realm,
yes.
talking about the divine council and its role in the sort of the cosmology of the universe and of the world. And so we're sort of trying to wrap our minds around all of those issues and bring to the Christian community that follows eschatology a revamped, revised cosmology that mm-hmm. a lot of the scientific theories, and we're willing to dive into issues like CERN, what's really going on with that Large Hadron Collider in Geneva that's built on top of a temple of Apollo that has a goddess or god of Shiva in the courtyard.
Just a coincidence.
Yes, and they pun on the name CERN, which is a European French acronym, but it references the god Cernunnos,
mm-hmm.
that is also another god of destruction. So you really have related to the Large Hadron Collider. We don't think that's coincidental. We think that is
yes.
instructive as to what it might be that they are intending. And so we're blessed to have Anthony Patch, Josh Peck, Gon Shimura to talk about these issues. We talk about the transhumanist issue, the man-machine interface, the man-machine hybrid. We cover some really challenging topics and try to weave these together in a coherent and hopefully, while it's packed full of information, I believe it's not that hard to read. In fact, people that have read it so far give me feedback have been kind of enthralled by it. So, so far, so good. But that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to create a kind of a new look at cosmology, challenge the Carl Sagans of the world that suggest that we're just a minuscule species on a average, on the outer rim of one galaxy among billions and billions of galaxies, as Carl Sagan would have said.
Yes, that's
and,
right.
And so we're challenging that. We're saying no. At the very center of cosmology is a God who creates and who created human beings. Far from being insignificant, we are meant to be the crown of creation.
Mm-hmm.
We were corrupted by sin, but we've been redeemed by that same God who created us, who came to earth, who was incarnated, and who has redeemed us and has forever stamped us as significant.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's not just about being in awe of the beauty of the creation, the way Carl Sagan might have us believe.
Yes.
It is about the fact that there is a cosmic drama playing out on our planet, and we are right in the last chapter of that drama, and getting ready to discover, you know, how it all comes out.
Yes, amen. I'd like to share with our listeners some of the chapter titles, just to whet their appetite, and I'm sure they'll go out and get pick up a copy of this book. The one that caught my eye right off the bat was "Do Angels Have DNA?" The Divine Council, Lesser Elohim, and the Government of God, the Electric Universe, the Gods of CERN Awaken. Was Einstein wrong? The emerging cosmology, physics, alchemy, and the new reality. Folks, I'm telling you, you're going to want to get a copy of this book. From you can they get it on your website, or is it only available on Amazon, Doug?
Yeah, is to get it. Go to Amazon. You can get it either as a ebook now. It's available on Kindle.
Okay.
It should be available very soon, like in a matter of days, on Apple iBooks, Barnes and Noble Nook, Lulu. But yeah, the paperback is available from Amazon. If you want to support the ministries, either Prophecy in the News or Southwest Radio Church, they carry the book now.
Excellent.
RadioChurchSWRC.com.
Yes.
You can purchase the book there. And then through all of Amazon's distribution networks, the book is out there. It's doing very well. We're getting great feedback. And Anthony Patch, of course, he's doing shows all the time, and
yes.
referencing this whole issue of CERN and what's going on really at CERN.
Yes, yeah.
Folks, visit Doug's website, doomsdaydoug.com, and take advantage. He's got a tab there for PowerPoints. I'm looking at 12 different PowerPoint presentations, in-depth studies of Scripture on a number of different topics of interest. I know that you'll really benefit from this. So, Doug, I appreciate you being on the show with me and discussing this, and I know we have a lot more that we need to talk about, so we'll have to do that at another time.
Well, I would be really pleased to do that. Thank you, Mike, for having me on. It's been a lot of fun.
Doug, thank you, and God bless.
Soaring Eagle Radio is a production of Transforming Word Ministries and is released under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License. You may subscribe to the show on iTunes, follow us on Facebook where you can discuss this episode, and of course follow Soaring Eagle Radio on Twitter at Soaring Eagle Rad, and listen to every episode from our website, www.soaringeagleradio.com. The opening audio montage collection was created by Micah 68 Productions. You can visit them on the internet at www.mika68.com for more information. Friends, remember the Apostle Paul's admonition to the believers meeting in Rome. Therefore, I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. I'm your host, Mike Spaulding. Thank you for joining us today for this edition of Soaring Eagle Radio.
Thanks for tuning in today to the Soaring Eagle Radio program. For more information about the show, write us at Soaring Eagle Radio, 682 West Grand Avenue, Lima, Ohio, 45801. You may also contact Mike directly by email at the following address, pastormike@woh.rr.com. God bless you today as you seek him.